This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 10th, episode 1758. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, we are back here on the Mary Kitzmiller training episode, and I cannot believe that it is August already and Mary is here, but she is, and boy, the listeners never run out of questions for you, do they?
I know, it's awesome. If I had my way, I would just answer questions all hour, but you know, you got to break it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. We make her actually do some other things too. So you have to get Mary out of her comfort zone every once in a while. So we're going to go right to Jennifer and find out what's coming up on today's show.
Coming up on today's monthly training episode with Mary Kitzmiller, powered by Horseware, Glenn is going to start us off with a quick yet thorough recap of what's going on at the Mongol Derby thus far. And then mid-show, we're going to have 2017 Extreme Mustang Makeover competitor Jimbo Al Britton. And he's going to stop by for a chat. What a great name. And then it's Q&A time as Mary answers listener-submitted questions. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Well, before we get to the Mongol Derby report, we have something that we wanted to talk about this morning. Happened a couple of days ago, and we haven't talked about it on the show here yet, and I was kind of holding out, waiting for Mary to talk about it, because we both know Sean Patrick. Sean is a trainer. He's competed at the... Was he the year... He was competing the year you were, right, at the...
We actually both competed together both years. So we picked up our horses in 2013 and we competed in 2014 and 2015.
Sean and his wife had a beautiful daughter named Madeline, or Maddie, everybody called her. She's 7 years old. Unfortunately, for the last couple of years, she's been really plagued with cancer and battling it. And then she went into remission. And then, about 2 months ago, they found out that she had more growths on her liver. So they went in about 2 weeks ago and they did an operation that the doctors thought was very successful to get the tumor off the liver. And everybody was pretty happy about it after, right, Mary, from what I was understanding?
Yeah, that's what I gathered from what I picked up is this wasn't exactly expected. Obviously, when you've got a child battling a serious illness, you don't know what's going to happen. But from what I understand, the operation was great and they were ready to move on and, you know, just keep going. And as it turned out that she had several complications and didn't make it through the recovery after the surgery.
Yeah, she did die a couple days ago. It was a big shock to Sean. He did a very emotional post on his page. If you want to read that, go to SeanPatrickTraining.com or Sean Patrick, or I'm sorry, Sean Patrick's Facebook page. Just search for Sean Patrick. Well, she was 8 years old. She was a delight. We met her many times, and she was always bubbly and always fun. She was at Road to the Horse this year, as a matter of fact. And, she just was a delight to be around. And I know that everybody that knew her, she brightened up their life a little bit. And we just want to give our best to Sean and his wife and the family and everybody involved. There is services tomorrow. They're going to be down near Daytona Beach in Florida. So if you want to, you can find out the details about the services. We were going to go over, but we're heading for Ada tomorrow. We'll be in Philadelphia. So go to Sean Patrick's Facebook page, and you'll find all about the services there, too. Very sad week for all of us that knew the family. All right, let's change gears a little bit and head to Mongolia.
Horse Nation.
This episode is Do Try This at Home.
Leslie,
failure is always an option.
Any result's a result, that's for sure.
Or not.
Well, I know, Mary, you had thought about doing the Mongol Derby this year. Let me ask you a question. Do you like freezing cold and your whole body turning into one big chafing mess?
I tell you what, I don't care what you say about the conditions that are over there. I was accepted. I could not go this year. I have an automatic acceptance for next year, and I'm trying to make it work. I would be over there. I don't care what the weather is. As a general rule, no, I don't like those things.
Well, as a matter of fact, the listeners have already started to talk about who we're going to follow in depth next year, and you've been voted, so it's like you're it.
Ooh, I'll be starting my GoFundMe today.
Yeah, exactly. You should, probably. They're already taking applications for next year. Day two ended just a couple of minutes ago. It ended at 8:30 Eastern time in the morning. They are 12 hours difference over there from our Eastern time. It was wild, wild day on the steppes of Mongolia. Yesterday, they had storms, freezing cold temperatures. They said like freezing 32 degrees, freezing cold temperatures, and rain most of the day. This was the comment on the leaderboard on the Adventurist website. And the leaderboard is something you can follow that they update as the day goes along to try and keep everybody up to date on what's going on. And I just checked and they haven't changed it yet. They said carnage mounting, hellacious weather, cold, wet, suffering riders, mainly those camping out last night, paying off for some, but mostly not for others. Weather causing horses to run for the hills, mounted or not. Bend down to adjust your jacket. Horse is gone. Reigning champ, who's Will, even called for help just short of U3. Vets looking after both two- and four-legged animals. The first retirement, they did have somebody that broke some ribs, and that was, we talked about her yesterday, and that's Julia Fisher, who's 65, the oldest competitor from the United States. She broke some ribs, and she's out. And she was devastated, apparently. There was some wild times last night, Mary, and I'm going to go over to the leaderboard here in a second because they've just all quit riding for the night. Jennifer Cook from New Zealand. This is all about her. These were some tweets from the Mongol Derby. Some A-grade rescuing from Hugh and Cozy Up front this AM. And this is Jennifer Cook hit the help button. That's their help button that they have on their GPS. That means bring in the reinforcements. She hit the deck. Bridle came off the horse. Her horse ran off. She couldn't catch it. Apparently, she tried forever. Various riders that are around her tried to herd the horse in. Didn't work. So when the crew got there that came to assist, they couldn't catch it either. Well, the horse's owner, the Mongolian guy, showed up on a motorcycle, and he ran that motorcycle up beside the bolting pony, and apparently somebody in the back of the motorcycle jumped off around the horse's neck and managed to get the pony stopped.
That is awesome.
So, and I love their hashtag on this post on Twitter, Missed Daddy. Hashtag Missed Daddy. So, that's unfortunately a 3-hour penalty for Jennifer because she pressed her button. Now, Annette Kriller from Sweden also had, and by the way, Jennifer was from New Zealand. Annette Kriller from Sweden, age 51, she had this happen. Some 15 kilometers, this is what happened. She fell off her horse. Apparently, her kit, that's her backpack, was attached to her horse, which you're never supposed to do. The horse outran the herders on their fastest horses. So the herders were there. The Mongolians were there. They finally caught it 15 kilometers away.
Oh, my God.
So she took the ride ahead. She actually got a ride in the truck ahead to the next stopover point, and she got a 3-hour penalty for that. Devin, when we were doing our special last night, by the way, we're doing specials every night at 8 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page with Devin Horn, who you know, who is a two-time competitor at Mongol Derby. And it's been so much fun to have her opinion on all of this. But she said, if you lose your pony, you're screwed. That pony's gone. And it's your job to find the pony. And if you can't, then you have to press the button and get the penalties. And that's what happened here. Now, it looks like, and we all, of course, are rooting for Leslie, one of our hosts here in the Horses in the Morning show. She is now sitting in third place. She was first yesterday, but she's in third place now. She's at checkpoint, it looks like, checkpoint number 7. And she is about 40 kilometers behind the two leaders who are at checkpoint number 8. It looks like they stayed over at the checkpoints last night, which was a good thing with the weather, because if you get caught out in between, you have to sleep in the open air unless you find a local family that will put you up. And there's not a lot of them out there. So it does look like there's one person, and that was Jody Ward, who actually, and I'm checking out to see where she was from. Jody Ward was from Australia. She's 30 years old, did not make it to the checkpoint. It looks like she stopped and camping out. And they said, you're risking it with the cold, wet weather to camp out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you stop at one of the checkpoints.
You also get a penalty for riding past the closing hour, so.
Well, which there, from what I understand, that did happen to some people, yes, or one person.
There were 10 penalties the first day, which is unheard of.
It's crazy.
Devin was shocked. So we did put out the recording we did last night from the Facebook feed. We put it out on our Horses in the Morning feed. You'll see it in there this morning, wherever you listen. So you can go catch that and get caught up. I just want to do real quick before we let Mary actually do her show. But this must be exciting for you too, because you are going to do this someday. So
you are going next year. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is good stuff.
She said that, or this is how we're sitting. Marie Paulzer, and Marie is out of New Zealand. She's 22 years old. She's a long-distance rider. She's the one that I talked about yesterday that spent 102 days in the saddle getting ready for this, traveling solo on horseback across New Zealand. So her butt is at least ready, and she's sitting in first place. Ed Farron, who Fernon, Ed is out of Australia also, so we have two Australians who are probably teaming up, age 29. He also has done some serious long-distance riding, like 1,000 kilometers. So I think those two are teaming up. Leslie's sitting in third place. Rebecca Pumphrey. Now, Rebecca is, we did talk about her a little bit yesterday, too. Rebecca is out of the UK. She's 30 years old, and I think we're going to be seeing her the whole way through. She's known as Pixie. Greg Chant is right after that. Greg is out of Australia. He's 43 years old. He's only been riding, Mary, since 2010. And he's doing the Derby for a physical and mental challenge. Well, Greg, you got it. there's no problem. If you were looking for a challenge, this year's a challenge. Then we had Jackie Mellett out of South Africa, is 40 years old. She's the potato farmer we talked about. And she is now sitting in sixth place. So that's how we're sitting after day two. This is a long race. They've covered 280 kilometers of the 1,000 kilometers. So we're going to be here for a few more days. And there was one report, and let me bring that up. And this was about Leslie that just came in an hour ago. This is from checkpoint number 7. We're very proud of Leslie Wiley's riding. She's taking good care. Well done. Keep it up.
That's so awesome.
From the vet.
Yeah, that was from the vet. Right. So
she hasn't, you know, of all the penalties, they had like 10 or 11. She hasn't been hit with a penalty at all, has she?
Nope. No penalties.
And she stayed out in the, you know, in the front of the pack.
Yeah, she was kicking butt there. Yeah. So it looks like this is the latest tweet from them that they now have at checkpoints 5 and 6. These are, by the way, the riders are now spread out for 150 kilometers. They're getting light showers. It's supposed to clear up tomorrow, so they're hoping that tomorrow will treat them all better than today did. And it looks like WS, let me check who that, that's Warren Sutton out of Australia. So the latest report is he had a low-speed tumble in a marmot hole, and you heard Devin talk about marmot holes being the biggest danger on the whole track. He did a once over on the horse's neck, stuck the landing on helmet, is 100% in good spirits. And then this is from Checkpoint 5, warm and steaming with fresh button air. So you know what they're having for dinner tonight. So
that sounds appetizing.
So that's where we're at with everything that is going on right now in the Mongol Derby. They're all tucked in for the night. Hopefully they're getting some rest. The smart ones stayed at checkpoints last night. The advantage to staying at the checkpoint and not going on your own and trying to find a local or sleeping out in the open is you don't have to worry about your horse. You haven't been assigned your next horse yet, so you don't have to worry about your horse. When you're out sleeping in the wild or even at the GERS, you have to constantly be getting up to make sure your horse is still there. So you really don't get good sleep. So that's why they say it's so important to stay at the checkpoints.
Well, see, here, in that respect, Jamie will have excellent practice with Zeus, having to get up every hour on the hour and make sure he has not escaped. So
he's not escaped
in that
from
respect,
the pasture.
Yeah, she's a little bit prepared.
Yep. Well, that's good. I heard from Tommy this morning, Leslie's husband, who is in good spirits and very proud of his little girl. So there we go. That's the update. Mary, let's get to your show. We have some training to talk about, and we're going to do that. We're going to take a break for our sponsor, hear a little bit about Ice Vibe, and then Mary's coming back with her training tip of the month.
Horse racing and elite equestrian sports. It's all about how to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the Ice Vibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, Ice Vibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe.
You can find out more details about Ice Vibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about Ice Vibe circulation therapy from Horseware. Well, Mary, what's your training tip of the month?
Okay, I'm sure I have touched on this in the past because it is one of the cornerstones of any good training program, I think. But, you know, I get all these fantastic listener questions every month, which are great. Keep them coming. I get a lot of questions at clinics, a lot of questions at expos that are usually incredibly specific to that horse and their little quirks and everything. And I've got a horse that when I take his buddy away, he prances and paces and what do I do? Or I've got a horse that likes to run home and we're on the trail, or he's barn sour, he's buddy sour, or he's too fast, or he's too slow, or he's too stiff, or he does this, he doesn't like me to pick up his right front foot, yada, yada, yada. And when I first started getting all these questions, when I go out in public at these events and stuff, I always thought, oh man, I got to really tailor a specific answer to that question. And it used to just really perplex me because when I got to thinking about it, be like, gosh, I've never really had that problem. I've never had a horse that it wasn't a big deal to pick up his right front foot and all of this stuff. And this is not to brag on me and my excellent skills. But what I found out is you can prevent a great deal of those issues or help solve them if you follow just the very simple advice that I've always been given of control your horse's feet. And that's something that, you know, in the natural horsemanship world is kind of beaten into you like, oh, move his feet forwards, backwards, left and right. You got to control his feet, control his feet, control his feet. And I had heard it so much as a young trainer that I just kind of started ignoring it. Like, yeah, I move my horse's feet every day. You know, I move them forwards, backwards, left and right. But it goes a little bit deeper than that. There's a little bit more nuance to it. A lot of you guys probably know you can't get control over your horse just by tiring them down, especially if you own some of the hotter breeds like your Arabs and your Thoroughbreds. And some bloodlines of quarter horses. So it's not about tiring them out or humbling them or things like that. So what I do every day with my horse, whether I'm working with him on the ground or under saddle, is I kind of mentally go through his list of body parts. And you can kind of break down a horse's body parts into five simple groups. So you've got the horse's pole. You've got their head and neck. You've got their shoulders. You've got their rib cage. You've got their hindquarters. So every day, no matter what horse I'm training, I go through those five things. And I think, okay, what have I done today to work the horse's pole? What have I done to really control the head and neck? What have I done for the shoulders, rib cage, hindquarters, and so on? So it depends on where the horse is in training. So if it's a brand new colt that I'm starting, has never been ridden, maybe not has not been handled very much, I might work a horse's pole by teaching him to give laterally and vertically to the halter or the bridle. And that kind of goes as well for the head and neck. That kind of all goes together pretty much. When it comes to the shoulders, and the shoulders are so important, I work on a horse's shoulders more than any other body part, because that's your steering right there. That's your steering. That's what you're going to use to help move the horse laterally. It's very important. So if it's a brand new colt, they don't know very much, I'll just make sure I can just push their shoulders over a step or two, whether it's on the ground or under saddle. And I just ask them to follow a feel. And by follow a feel, I mean, I'll pick up on my rein or lead rope, tip their nose in the direction I want them to go. Hopefully their head and neck will follow that nose, and then the shoulders will follow that head and neck. And as soon as that happens, I release. So, you know, very simple things I'm doing. Rib cage. This would be if I'm asking my horse to bend around my inside leg, or asking my horse to two-track or half pass or leg yield. So I'll work on those kinds of exercises to work on my horse's rib cage. And then finally, the hindquarters, which is probably one of the most important things. For me, I teach horses to do what's called a one rein stop. So if it's a young horse or a horse that has a lot of problems, I want to make sure I've got that emergency brake. So I want to disengage those hindquarters. I do that a lot in the beginning. Disengaging a horse's hindquarters is like pushing the clutch in a vehicle. The engine can still run, but you're not going anywhere if you've ever driven a stick shift. But then as the horse starts to learn and get more advanced in their training, instead of using the hindquarters as just I need to kick your hindquarters over to control you when you're going too fast or going the wrong way, or you might do something a little scary. Then I'll start asking, can I get the hindquarters to just take one step? Can I get you to step over your hindquarters with very minimal aids, without having to bend your head around, without having to pull on your reins too much or kick you with my legs or things like that? And then that'll eventually evolve into using the hindquarters to get your lead departures and even your lead changes. So again, depending on where the horse is in training, these little exercises I do for these body parts are going to become more subtle, more nuanced. But I check that box. I check those five boxes off every day. Did I work on your pole? Did I work on your head and neck? Did I work on your shoulders? Did I work on your rib cage? Did I work on your hindquarters? And I have found in doing that simple checklist every day, if a horse had a previous problem, that problem is usually very significantly reduced. Or in the case of a colt that I get to start from scratch, I generally don't have things crop up with those horses that are at least not very challenging issues. Those colts tend not to act buddy or barn sour. They tend not to want to bolt, buck, run, you know, run off, rear, all of those things that can get us in trouble. So most of the time, if you were to bring a horse in training to me and you would say, okay, my horse won't get on a trailer, my horse won't pick up his right hind foot, my horse won't do this, he doesn't take clippers, he doesn't accept warmer, he doesn't do this, would you please work on this? I'll say, yes, okay, I'll work on it. But that doesn't mean I'm going to take a horse in that won't go in the trailer. I'm going to immediately take him to the trailer and work on that. What I'm going to do is this checklist, you know, work on the pole, head and neck, shoulders, ribcage, hindquarters, whether it's on the ground or under saddle. And then by the time I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's try getting in a trailer. I have so much control over my horse's body parts. And my horse has so much understanding to kind of follow me because they know there's something a little bit magical about getting control of your horse's feet. They seem to get with you a lot more and stop looking around to other things to give them comfort. I can't explain what it is, but to me, that's the cornerstone of my training program. So, a lot of what I do with training horses and with horses in clinics and expos is all about, can I move your feet? How well can I move your feet? I will never get 100%. Perfect, but that's my goal.
That's very interesting that you talk about having, yes, move the feet, but you have to control those. I like how you break it down into different sections. It makes it very easy to get your head around. And that's something that Scooter has taught me, because Scooter's a very fussy, busy pony, that it wasn't enough to just, quote, control his feet, because he likes to move. He's going, oh, cool, let's move all around. But it wasn't controlled. It wasn't me moving his feet. It was more of a case of me kind of very generally letting him move into a certain space. It wasn't really helping. But when I took the time to be careful about it, okay, I'm going to control your face and your pole and hold it here, regardless of what your feet are doing. Okay, that we can do that for a few seconds. And then go through the different sections. And once I got that, then I controlled his feet. It really does make a difference. I can say he gets fussy. He wants to nibble on my shoulder or something. He's a very mouthy pony. I can ask him to back up exactly two hooves, and I can tell him which two hooves. Put those two hooves there. Now put those two hooves over there, and now move your hindquarters over there by moving those two hooves. And it makes an enormous difference in his attitude. He'll come right back to me, go, oh, yes, I'm with you. I can pay attention. I can be still. And the biggest place I've seen that improve his practical life, it's not just something we do for fun and giggles. He is so much better for the farrier now, because he used to be a little turd. but now he's much, much, the farrier doesn't go, oh, God, we've got to do Scooter again. He's so much better for the farrier. And I credit that process of not just moving his feet. Okay. That's not enough. It's more, a little bit more complex than that. And that was very well explained.
Thank you. And that's a good example. You know, I've got a horse with farrier issues. You would think, oh, okay, we need to do this with his feet. We need to tie him down, or we need to maybe give him a little drugs or get the twitch out or whatever. It's like, no, just go through, move those body parts. And even though maybe you didn't very specifically work on picking up his feet for the farrier, it kind of is almost a magical thing. Like all of a sudden, wow, you're really good for the farrier now.
Yeah. And again, we didn't, quote, practice holding his feet up. Now he gets his feet cleaned out, I know, probably five times a day. We check their feet a lot because we have rocks in our driveway. We want to make sure there's nothing stuck in there. So they get their feet picked up very, very frequently. But it's not one of those, you know, you read in a lot of advice columns when your horse has issues with the farrier, pick up their feet and hold them and tap on them and stuff like that. For him, it wasn't that process. It was the process of being patient and being still when a human being asked you to.
My pony has the same problem I do.
He's ADD.
ADD going there.
Yeah, yeah. we match.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right. Well, let's do this. Yeah, I know we have a lot more listener questions to get to, and Mary's going to pick out a few here. But yesterday, Mary and I had a chance to talk a little bit about girths, because, you know, girths are very important. Not only do they hold the saddle on, they have to hold the saddle on and not hurt your horse at the same time. So we got to catch up with Justin from Total Saddle Fit to talk a little bit about the shoulder relief cinch. We'll be right back after this. New sponsor to the Mary Kitzmiller episode of Horses in the Morning, but they're not a new sponsor to the Horse Radio Network. They've been with us for years and years and years over on the Dressage Show. Reese and Philip swear by his products and talk about it every week on the show. We have Justin here from Total Saddle Fit here to talk to us about the shoulder relief cinch. Hi, Justin.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Now, you started on the English side with the Total Relief Girth, and that became so popular, you decided to take a look at the cinch. What makes a shoulder relief cinch better than any other cinch?
So basically, we have the Shoulder Relief Girth, which is our very popular English girth that's available for dressage and jumping saddles. And it was working really well, and we got a ton of requests for a Western version. So basically, 2 years later, here we are. Now, the thing that makes the shoulder relief cinch so much better than just a traditional straight cinch is how it actually fits anatomically to the horse. So it'll improve how the saddle sits on the horse's body, because the girth, or the cinch, I should say, and I'll use those terms interchangeably, so please forgive me. The cinch will sit in the center. The center of the cinch will sit in the horse's natural girth groove, but the sides will buckle to the saddle a little bit farther back. So what that does is it prevents the latigos from angling forward and pulling the saddle over a horse's shoulders. Then what happens is you get this ancillary benefit where, because of this kind of funny shape, and if you look at it on the internet, you'll see what I mean by funny shape, it's got cutaways for the horse's elbows, so the horse's elbows have more space to move as well. So it's a totally different shape cinch than you've probably ever seen, but it is super, super effective.
I'm so glad you're making this for the Western side, because I've been like targeted in your ads for the last couple years for the English one. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, I wonder if I could rig my Western saddle to fit an English girth. So I'm really excited that you guys are making a Western one. Okay, so one thing that you were saying that I especially have a question right now. I have a little Mustang who has no withers, and every single saddle I put on her, everyone slides forward. And do you think this would help if you've got a horse where, I mean, the saddle fits her all right. It's just the way that she shaped it wants to go. And that's happened with a lot of colts of mine, too. It wants to kind of go up over their withers instead of freeing that shoulder up.
Totally. So what you end up running into on some horses, or kind of a lot of horses actually, is regardless of saddle fit, you sort of have a physics problem here, which is the girth is always going to go around the narrowest part of the horse's body, the girth groove, you know, kind of right behind the elbows. And even if you girth it up farther back or set your saddle farther back when you're tacking up, eventually it's all going to kind of settle into the easiest place to sit, which is the narrowest point around their body. So what you'll have is a saddle that might fit fantastic, but the physics of the girth are scooting forward, and that angles the latigos forward. And now you have these forward angled latigos that are kind of creep, that are just sort of physically pulling the saddle, scooting the saddle up the horse's body into the shoulders. So I think it would certainly work for a case like the case that you mentioned.
Awesome. So I'm already on your website, and I'm about to hit the order button, because like I said, I've seen this on the English side and I'm like, what a great idea. I think this would work really well, especially because most of my horses are very overweight. So all their saddles kind of want to slide forward a little bit, like you said, to that area that's just the most narrow and easiest for the saddle to fit. One of the issues that I've had with training horses, I get all sorts of horses in training, lots of colts, lots of Mustangs, and in particular, I'll get horses that either through previous problems or it's just kind of in their nature, they act pretty cinchy when I girth them up. So, you know, I go to tighten my cinch and their ears are pinned and they're swishing their tail and that kind of thing. Have you had any luck with people getting relief from those kinds of problems when they're saddling up their horse? Do you think that might help a horse that's a little bit reticent to be cinched up?
Absolutely. We've had a ton of feedback on this cinch, which has been super, super positive. And that's one of them. You know, I can't say for sure every horse is going to fix their girthiness, of course, but we've had a ton of improvement in that regard. You know, it can come from a lot of places, because the saddle's sitting on their back better. It's not irritating their elbow. It's just a softer, more sort of anatomically friendly design overall. So it definitely has improved the cinchiness in a lot of horses.
I have another question in particular. So with the shape of the girth and how it might help some horses that I've had issues with. So I've read, just kind of glanced over some articles, and I don't know exactly what this is called, but I've heard that there's kind of a vein that runs behind the horse's elbow, and you have to be very careful with your cinch placement or cinching them up too tight. And it was one of those things I'd read about and kind of thought about. And then I do have a horse in particular that if I'm not absolutely careful when cinching her up, she has a really hard time walking off. She gets stuck in her tracks. One time she actually laid down. So I'm wondering if this might be the solution for that. Have you noticed that it's had any kind of relief for horses that get really sucked up when you cinch them up, that have trouble moving forward once you've cinched them?
You know, similarly, in the feedback that we've received, we've definitely had that. Because I mean, the way that folks, for someone to reach out to just sort of a company they don't know and say, hey, you know, this product really helped. We've had some pretty incredibly glowing testimonials in that sense, like just so much more willing to move, so much happier when getting cinched up. So we've got a lot of that. That's one of those hard questions that, you know, like the last one, it's kind of hard to say absolutely yes on this, but in a lot of cases, yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to tell because so many different horses have unique problems, but I'm seeing a lot of possibility with the cinch. And then, so do you have, I see you have a fleece line one. Do you have different kind of liners? Because I know the Western trainers, we tend to be really persnickety about, some people really like this type of lining and some people like that type of lining. Do you offer different varieties for that?
Yeah, so that's a good question because you're totally right. Everybody has their own preference, even more so than the English community, I would say. And what we do for that is we've got three different liner types, limestone-based neoprene, we have 100% wool fleece, and then we've got wool felt. And the coolest part is that the cinch is a leather body with like a Velcro backing. So what you can do is, regardless of the liner that you want on your cinch, you can peel off one and replace it with the other. So everything's interchangeable. So if you bought a cinch that had a neoprene liner on it, you could replace that for a different season, for a different horse, with a fleece, a felt, or another neoprene. So whether it comes to washing convenience, swapping it from one horse to another, seasonal preferences in what you ride your horse in, you only really need to have one cinch body, and then you can just interchange the liners.
And that works so well for me as a trainer. In fact, I just went through a rash of horses that got a little girth fungus thing. And when you have a cinch that the lining is sewed in, you know, the only options you have, unless you want to throw that in your washing machine with all the hardware, is just to kind of hose it off and let it dry. So that would be exciting to have a few different types of liners that I can just throw in the wash at the end of the day or end of the week and prevent all those sorts of issues that you have when riding several horses.
Now, Justin, the website obviously is totalsaddlefit.com, but one of the things that you offer that not too many other companies offer is the 110% money-back promise. Explain that.
That's right. Basically, you know, we sell new products into new and innovative products that a lot of people haven't seen before. So to just instill confidence, we believe that what we sell works. So if anybody gets the product, they can use it for 30 days, does not have to come back new. They can use it for 30 days. And if they don't like it, they can refund it for 110%. So basically, you know, if a product is $100, they get 110 back. That's our way of saying, this is for real. We believe in it. And I think you will too.
Helps cover the shipping too. So that's kind of cool. You know, that's really neat.
Definitely.
Very good. Well, you can go to totalsaddlefit.com. You can see the English and the English girths and the Western cinches on there. He also has a really cool saddle pad that you're going to want to check out, the six-point saddle pad. So go over and take a look at that as well. Well, thank you, Justin. We really appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you very much, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we appreciate him being part of the show now, and I know that Reese and Philip over on the Dressage Show really, really love their English versions of this, and I know Mary's going to give it a try, so we'll get to hear how she likes it, especially on that one particular horse. Well, Mary, have you picked out some questions?
Oh, man, you caught me off guard. Yes, I have. Stephanie Eileen asks, my previous question to Jamie about my off-the-track thoroughbred that gets strong in the field, mostly at a canter, is changing bits cheating? He's good at stopping in the arena. Is it possible to teach him to slow down, stop in an environment when they just want to go, go, go? He's in a French link. So I would say no, changing bits is not cheating. We have gone through this kind of renaissance in horsemanship and had a lot of trainers say, oh, you never need anything but a snaffle, or so, in some cases, even a rope halter, a bitless bridle. And so then I think some of us have gotten to think, well, gosh, if I change him out of a snaffle, I'm not doing good horse training, and I he should be able to ride in anything. I think it's good to kind of go through your bit collection. And first, some horses don't like certain kinds of bits. You got to find something that he agrees with. And if your horse is a bit strong, I would say your safety is paramount. Nothing is going to fix bad horsemanship. So if he's running off with you, which I don't think that's what this horse's issue is, but if he's just flat running off with you, you're not going to put a harsher bit on and fix that problem. You might help it for, you might get away with it for a little bit, and then your horse will learn to run through the harsher bit, and then it'll become an arms race. He'll get stronger than you put a stronger bit, and then he'll get even stronger than you put a stronger bit. So you've got barbed wire in his mouth. Obviously I know Stephanie is not, looking to just overpower her horse or anything. But yeah, if you're out and about, and I know she talked in a Facebook post about going to a Kimberwick. I really like Kimberwick. I don't think there's any problem with that at all. As for the question of, okay, he's out in the field, he's just going to want to go. I would say something you can do to prepare for that is work on lots and lots and lots and lots of transitions, a lot of downward transitions, upward transitions, because, if you do hundreds of those a ride when you're working in the arena or wherever you're working, you'll get your horse in the habit of sort of waiting on you. Is it okay if I go now? Instead of just flat running off, you'll get them in the habit of listening to you every stride, because you may ask them to do something in the next few strides. Another piece of advice I got that I thought was really quite good. I got two pieces of advice. I was riding my horse Guthrie in his first cowboy race, and he did very well. Although this was the first time I asked him to like really go fast. And he flagged his tail the whole time and sort of kind of grabbed the bit and took me for a ride a little bit. And so I asked, how do I prepare for that? And he said, this trainer said, well, I go to a racetrack or find a nice long track with good footing, and I will gallop my horses. Now, he doesn't just like throw the reins and let them run off. He'll bridle them up and, make sure they're traveling in frame and they're going straight and all that stuff. And he'll gallop them. And at first the horse is like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. And he just keeps galloping. And then after a few minutes, the horse goes, oh, okay, I'd like to slow down now. And he says, no, you're going to keep going. And then after a little bit longer, the horse is like, okay, please let me slow down. I want to say, you're not going to run an unfit horse, and you're not going to go take them beyond what they can physically do, but you kind of want to take them beyond that point where they think this is just a really fun game. And after a while, the horse, you kind of take a little bit of the, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever, and teach your horse that galloping is just as much of a job as walking calmly, as trotting, as loping. And it sort of takes away the, it's kind of like, I guess a good analogy is when you're underage, alcohol seems like this great thing that you, oh my gosh, I can't wait. And then when you get your ID, you're like, well, it's not so great now. So you're, by practicing galloping, does that make sense? I hope that's okay. By practicing galloping,
make sense, actually.
Yeah, you know, you're sort of taking away that, you're taking the edge off of it a little bit. I always want it to be fun for my horse, but if I practice it a lot, then my horse is like, okay, you know, this isn't something we only do a couple of times a year, and I'm not going to go crazy because you let me gallop, type of thing. I hope that makes sense.
I think you've really hit something there. I don't know so much about the Western disciplines because I haven't spent much time there. But I know for a lot of folks who ride English but do not participate in disciplines that require galloping, eventing, for example, but you still ride English, when they ask the horse to move on at a canter or are out in the open and pick up a energetic trot where the horse might try to break into a canter of his own accord, the horses will get a little bit silly. They'll put their head down and kind of ring it around or threaten to crow hop or something like that. And that's just horses. And you absolutely nailed it. Find ways to practice that pace regularly. And if it's difficult to do in the open, maybe practice it in a very large arena the first few times, in that, okay, do your regular workout, get all warmed up. And then towards the end, when the horse isn't quite so freshy fresh, ask for a good hand gallop around the arena a couple of times and push that envelope of your comfort just a little bit more and just a little bit more, and do it regularly. Don't do it just once a month. If you do two laps around at a good clip at a very energetic hand gallop around an arena, and you do that once or twice a week all the time, then when you are in the open and maybe an unplanned fast trot that breaks into a little canter in the open happens, your horse is going to be a lot less likely to go, "Woohoo, I got away with something."
Exactly. And there's another a piece of advice I was given that's sort of along the same lines. I had one of the cowboys from the 4/6 ranch. So these guys are riding on thousands and thousands of acres. I asked him, you know, I had a horse that was really forward and you couldn't tire him out. You just couldn't. He's a ranch horse. He's meant to go all day. And he was just very forward, very strong, wouldn't ever run off or anything like that. But just like, you know, I just wanted him to settle down into a nice, relaxed lope. And he said, you know what, I'll do with one like that. And he rides almost exclusively out in the open, but you can do this at home, you know, in your arena as well. He said, I will do long trotting everywhere I go. He says, I'll push him into the canter just so they don't get frightened by that transition, but I will long trot that horse everywhere. And, you know, he goes, I'll almost make them think that, you know, this is the gait that we do when we're out in the open. But then what he'll start doing is he'll push them forward in that trot more and more and more till they just tip over into canter. Let him canter a few strides and he'll bring them back down. And he'll do that several times, just that, because that transition right there, that upward, like you were saying, that upward transition from trot to canter, that's where the most stuff happens, whether the horse is going to toss their head.
You are absolutely right.
Yes. Whether I'm starting a colt or I'm riding a horse out that's never been out before, that trot to canter is where things go down. That's where I'm grabbing a hold of my saddle and sitting down deep. You know, it usually doesn't happen.
Sometimes
when
makes them even worse. Yeah. Especially if you are on a thoroughbred. If you sit down on back right there, they're going, okay, I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. So what I'll do is I'll practice that. I'll just do bigger and bigger trots until they tip over into canter, push them forward into a true canter, then bring them back, and then do it again and again and again and again, just into that transition. That'll do two things. You get to practice that scary transition where things happen a lot until you usually iron out all those kinks of your horse, maybe kicking up in the back, charging forward, throwing a little crow hop in there. So you get to practice that over and over and over again. But also, every time you go to canter and you bring your horse back, pretty soon, one of those times, and it might take hundreds of transitions, one of those times, my horse will go to canter and I'll say, okay, keep going. And he'll kind of look back at me like, oh, we're still going. Are you sure? Are you sure you want me to keep going? And I love that feeling of having to encourage my horse. No, you should keep going now. That's a nice problem to have. And you know, it's just good.
You're Yeah. And you're also teaching them those aids, because each time you break into that canter and you come back to trot again, without drilling and grilling and having the horse go, oh, this sucks, he's learning to listen to your shifting weight.
Exactly.
And come back and listen to that. And one of the things you see a lot is people will go from that canter to that trot, and they'll sit down hard and they'll pull hard, and then the horse becomes resentful. So be careful. Even if your adrenaline has gone up quite a bit, you're going, oh, geez, I got to go back to it. This is practice. It's okay. Try to keep your aids appropriate so that the horse does not anticipate you hauling on his mouth or slamming down into his back when he picks up that canter, because that can, to use one of your really good terms, that can poison your trot to canter transitions later. So be careful, be cognizant of your position when you're doing this.
Exactly. And my general rule of thumb is I'm always slow to pick up, quick to release. So unless I think I'm going to die within the next few strides, even if my horse is starting to really take off with me, I'm going to really take my time picking up my horse and bringing him back, because a lot of times when they are charging forward, it could be anxiety, it could be frustration, it could be fear, or excitement. And if I'm fast with my hands and I'm jerking on him or pulling really, really hard, really, really fast, it's just going to feed into that and make him stronger and faster. So I bring him back down nice and slow. As soon as he comes back to my aids, even if it took him for a little while, I'm going to, at the very least, open up my fingers like that. You know, once he makes it to that trot, I'll say, oh my gosh, that's good. And throw my hands forward a little bit and let him feel that relief and comfort in his mouth. Like, this is the right, this is the right answer. You did correct. You know, if he speeds up again, I can bring him back again. But you don't want to just hold him the whole time. You need to release.
Yep.
Very good.
I distinctly remember a cross.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Sorry. You're back. I distinctly remember a particular cross-country school I was doing with some students back in the day. And the one young gal, a very, very talented young rider and weighed 98 pounds soaking wet, had her very first ever OTTB. Who had quite a bit of very good training post-race. He was already what I would have called a made young rider's horse, but it was her first experience on a thoroughbred. Previous to that, she had ridden an adorable little Arabian who never touched the bit and never went any faster than he absolutely had to. So it was a little bit of an experience for her, and we went out in the cross-country course and we're hopping over little novice level fences and everybody's having fun, but she was having a lot of trouble with him because he'd land off of the fence and gallop off into the sunset. And, 15 minutes later, she'd come back for the rest of the group when she finally got him to stop. And I was trying to help her bring the horse back because I knew he had the skill. It was just getting her to use the aids properly. And we were kind of at an impasse and she was getting a little bit afraid of him. So finally I said, just go over this super teensy jump. It was probably a foot tall. And I said, when you land, turn him gently to the right in a big old arc. And just imagine you're a jockey in a horse race. And when you see them cross the finish line, you see them literally let go of the horse. The reins are flapping in the breeze. And what does the horse do? The horse actually comes back and slows down, doesn't he? And she loved horse racing. So she went, oh, I know exactly what you mean. And that's what she did. She landed over the fence. She started to turn in a big old arc and she shoved her hands into his neck and completely let go of the tension in the reins. And the horse said, oh, you're not going to pull on me? I don't need to pull back. And the light bulb came on in his head. And it was a real watershed moment for the two of them because she realized she didn't need to pull. He realized she wasn't going to, and they were able to move forward. So never underestimate the power of letting go of the reins.
Very good. Well, let's take a break for Dr. Roses, and then we're going to come back. Mary, we'll have time for one more quick one while Jennifer gets our guest on. Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective for treatment for all manner of cuts and scrapes on your horse. And Dr. Rose's is the must-have product here at the Horse Radio Network headquarters to keep PT Scooter's delicate white pasterns free from dew poisoning and scratches. Ask for Dr. Rose's at your local tack store or feed supplier, or visit them online at drrosesremedies.com. That's drrosesremedies.com. All right, Mary, we have time for one more quick one.
Okay, I'm going to go to the second one in the list because I think I can answer it quickly. I'm going to try. So this is from Aubrey Moore. I have no idea if this has been covered, but I have a feisty pony that paws a lot. She paws in the cross ties if she's left there too long. She paws in the trailer if it's not moving. She paws if you're standing next to her stall and ignoring her. I've tried ignoring her when she paws, praising her when she's standing quietly. It helped, but I'm wondering if this is the right thing to do or if there's a better way to go about it. So I think Aubrey is definitely on the right track. This is one of those issues that I have a lot of tips and tricks that I'll use to help a horse. But I would say the best luck I've ever had is clicker training my way around this issue. So one of the things that I find that we don't work enough on in horse training, and I've mentioned this before, is emotional control. We work on, we talked about foot control. Can you move your feet here? Can you move your feet there? So that's all important. And that kind of stuff would help this pony with this problem. You've got the issue of horses that just, they can't stand still, whether they're tied up, they're in the trailer, they're waiting for their chance to go in the show pen, you're in the warm-up arena and they don't want to stand still. So one of the exercises I do is I will start marking that good behavior of standing still. Now, if I have a horse that paws after standing still for 3 seconds, then I know that I might be able to get 2 seconds of good behavior out of them. So having that click and that treat, that marker signal and that treat, it makes a huge difference because I can tell the horse exactly that moment you did just there, that was the right thing to do. So, I will ask my horse to stand still. I often use a mark. I have a little rubber mat that I ask my horses to stand on because it gives them something tangible. It gives them a tangible thing to do instead of pawing. So I'll place my horse's front feet on the mat, and first I'll reward them from stepping on the mat, and I'll do that several times. But then I'll start getting what I would call duration. So I place their front feet on the mat. And if I know they're going to start pawing after 3 seconds, then I'm going to ask for 2 seconds and I'm going to click and treat. And I'll do that several times until I've got this little foundation established. And then I'll tell my horse, okay, if you can do 2 seconds, I know you can do 3 seconds. And I get so meticulous about this. This is based off of an exercise I borrowed from another trainer, and it's called 300 peck pigeon. I don't have time to go into what that means, but what the gist of it is, I will just add a second of time every time I work on this with my horse. So I'll work on one day, every time you stand for 2 seconds, click treat. And then I'll say, okay, now it's got to be 3 seconds. And I'll set criteria. What do I want to happen? Well, you have to keep 2 front feet on the mat. You have to not paw. So you have to keep them firmly on the mat, quiet. And I'll be pretty simple. So I'll just start with, I want 2 front feet on the mat quietly, which means don't paw. So then I'll go for 3 seconds, click treat. Okay. I know you can do 3 seconds. So now we're going to move on to 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, click treat. Now 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, click treat. 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. I did this with my horse Guthrie, because at expos, he didn't do this at home. he only did this in public, is when I would try to give demos with him, I don't always have a place to tie my horse. I don't have an assistant with me to hold my horse while I'm talking to the crowd. So he would be in there with me and he would get kind of silly, not bad silly, but he'd walk around and he'd roll in the round pen and he'd play with the obstacles I had out for the demo, or he'd try to chew on my sleeve. And it's cute to a point, but at some point I have to look like a professional trainer with a well-behaved horse. So I practice this with him at home. And initially I only did this for that particular weird problem of he's a little stupid in front of a crowd. He gets silly. But I didn't realize what kind of effects it would have everywhere else. So I practiced this 1, 2, 3, and I would actually walk circles around him and pretend like I'm giving my little speech to the crowd, put him on the mat, and I'd walk around him as if I'm talking to people, answering questions, and I'd be counting my steps. Okay, I walked around you 5 steps, click treat. Now 6 steps, click treat. Now 7, click treat. My rules were, once you've stood still for a count of 6, you have to go to 7 now. I'm not going to backtrack unless you just completely have gotten confused about it or I've jumped ahead too far. So I up the criteria every time. Now you're going to hold still for 10 steps. Now 12, now 20, now 30. My goal number, and I haven't reached it with Guthrie yet because I just haven't picked up on the exercise again. But my goal is 300. That's my magic number. Because if a horse can hold still with 2 front feet on the mat quietly for a count of 300, that is a pretty committed horse to that good behavior.
Can I add in there, committed trainer to stand there and count to 300 too?
Yeah. No, I didn't do this all in one session or 2 sessions or 3 sessions. I would just pick I work on him on our ground, work on our riding. We do this. And then sprinkled throughout those lessons every day, I'd say, hey, let's go work on our mat thing. Let's see, what were we on yesterday? Oh yeah, we got 25 steps yesterday. Let's go for 26 today. So I did this over a period of weeks. And even if your horse can stand there for a count of 20, that's really pretty good committed behavior. You're going to start seeing results that early on. What I noticed about this is my horse, who was already pretty well-mannered, got amazing about being quiet and still, because not only have we had lots of practice of it, but he'd had lots of reward. My rule was also not to punish him for doing the wrong thing. I would ignore the wrong behavior within reason. If he was doing something unsafe, I will stop that. But I would just ignore the wrong behavior, reward the right behavior. So he just only knew that this mat game that he played of standing still and quiet was just reward, reward, reward. That is his favorite thing to do. If I'm riding him or working him at Liberty and he sees that mat, he will leave me and stand on that mat. And he loves it. And so all of a sudden, he became amazing for the farrier. I can let him stand tied for hours on end. He's very good about that. He's great waiting in the show pen during our warm-up period. It just all around, it just like mellowed this horse out. It was crazy. So long story short, I would work on exactly what Aubrey has touched on in her question. Try to reward. Get a few moments to start, reward those good moments, quit your horse, before he has a chance to get really worked up about it, and just build up his mental stamina a little bit more every day.
Sounds terrific. Well, your guest is ready.
Okay, we have one of our 2017 Extreme Mustang Makeover trainers with us today. It's Jimbo Albritton. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, ma'am. Close enough. It's Albritton.
Albritton. Okay. I will remember that. What a cool name.
Thank you.
So you are a performance trainer based out of Florida, I take it. And you are training a horse for the 2017 Mustang Makeover in Fort Worth. This one, it's gotten the fiercest competition I've seen in a long time. Is this your first Mustang Makeover?
You know, it's not. We competed 2 years ago. We had a horse. Her name was Penny. We were trying to get ready for Jacksonville. It's the first the first time the makeover has come to Florida. And we got in that, and we had a phenomenal mare. She was just a dream to work with, and kind of easy, you know, I thought. And anyway, we come up to competition time in the week up, she tore a sestentary in her left front. So we thought the mare really had what it took to really shine at that show. And that's when the Mustang Makeovers really hooked me in. It's such a great program.
It is incredibly addictive. I agree with you. And so this will be your first time to compete. Other than these two horses, have you had Mustang experience before this? And if not, have you noticed any kind of big or surprising differences from working with your regular typical horse that you get in training?
You know, there is a big difference. And one, the wild factor. When we get them in, they're pretty dang wild and a raw animal, you know, if you will. So in typically in the horses we ride around here, they've had some kind of interaction. So that's the biggest difference. But as far as skill level, you know, and we're about to do a program with that is match a Mustang to a domesticated horse. I call it a papered horse and see how they go through the training and match them up. But I really don't think there's a whole lot of difference. I think it's kind of hard to scale because with the Mustang Makeover, we put in a lot of hours, and we kind of hit the ground running just as soon as they get here. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. But I'd match them right up to our everyday papered horses for sure.
And that's something, you know, I think people kind of get a generalization on Mustangs. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, it's a Mustang. That means it's like this. And I always tell people, you know, you can find a Mustang for anything you want. If you want something that's more hot and fiery, you can find a Mustang for that. If you want something that's got kind of a Spanish look to it or something more like a quarter horse or, and so I think they're very different, you know, from horse to horse, as well as just being kind of their own breed. My little Mustang this year, I decided I was going to do the bamboo pole gentling thing that I bought the videos. I was all excited, had my pole ready, and I unloaded her, and she walked right up to me and just started chewing on my pole. So I just dropped the pole in the dirt and just haltered her. So they're all different, and it's you know, that's just what makes them kind of cool, and it's what makes this challenge so challenging. So this Mustang Makeover, they've gone back to an older format that they did for the Big Mustang Million competition and a few before that. This one, they did not just give you a random horse. We actually bought our horses in the auction, and so we had a little bit of say in what kind of horse we were going to get. And I wanted to know, did you feel like you got the horse you wanted in the auction, and did she kind of match up with what you thought she would be, or did she surprise you?
Well, it's always a surprise with them, because you know, us sitting back, we had to watch it online, and watching a horse on video sometimes can be, you know, misleading. So the mare we got, every time I clicked on there to look at the horses, I kept going back to her. And so to answer your question, yes, she is the horse we wanted from the start. And she was different from what I expected. I expected her to kind of naturally go a little bit lower with her head and everything else from the videos that we saw. And, you know, she's been kind of tough. She's got a lot of flight to her, meaning it's been tough getting her just to stand still when she's around stuff. Then on the other hand, you know, kind of touching on what you just mentioned, we throw a tarp out there and I think, you know, it's going to take me 2 days to get her to cross it. And she goes across like a bulldozer. So I love the aspect of it, being able to see the horses and then bid on them. That was thrilling as well. You know, you get people bidding against you and it's like, oh, you know, that I love the aspect of it and the experience that we had. And, I think it's great, mainly because you can kind of expect a few things, but when those things hit the ground here at home, you're starting off fresh. So you got to push those expectations away and deal with what you have on hand.
And that's kind of the experience I had with mine as well. The mare that I was able to get two horses, and we're not allowed to compete on two. We have to put one in the trainer incentive program, which finds an adopter for it privately. And then the other is one we get to compete on. So my favorite horse that I paid a bunch of money for, she's great. I love her. But I just felt like that she was going to be my trainer incentive horse. And then the horse that I actually pulled out of the pool. So she had no adopters. And with those horses, those are first come, first serve. You throw $200 at them and the horse is yours. And that horse in the video, the only reason I went for her was she was from a herd management area that I've had a lot of luck with, the Jackson Mountains horses. But she was like high headed. Her tail flagged the whole time. She was high hocked. Like her hocks looked like they were on springs or something. And I thought, well, we'll see how she goes. And she actually ended up being, I got her off the trailer and started moving her around. I thought, oh my gosh, you're actually kind of nice. And so she's the one I'm going with. So it's amazing. I'm sure guys who are real seasoned at going to sales and stuff know what to look for, but it's always been a surprise to me how my horses reacted. Now, not only are you training a wild Mustang, but you are, we've got 4 months, and you've got 4 months, and at this show, this isn't like, oh, you kind of ride them around. You've got to do a reining pattern. You've got to show that the horse is gentle for a new owner with a handling and conditioning class. You've got to do a trail class, which involves a lot of precision and obstacles. Plus, if you make it through all that, you have to have the freestyle to end all freestyles if you want to place well. So it's a lot of training to put on a horse that's never been touched. And I was wondering, and I wonder this of all trainers, did you have to change your typical training program for this horse? Did you have to do more or less, or skip some steps that you would normally take, or ride the horse longer or less than you normally would? How has training this horse for this competition changed your training program, if at all?
You know, it's I think every horse that comes in, we have to adapt to them. So changing our kind of approach is going to matter on each and every horse as an individual. But the main thing with these Mustangs that it does for me is, you know, it's common to run in kind of to a brick wall with them. You know, get to a certain point, you're like, oh, I don't know what to do next. And it's made me get out there and look for more knowledge, you know, go to other professionals and you know, call them on the phone and go to their place and get more knowledge on horses in general. And that's kind of the main enjoyment I get out of these makeovers is, these horses, they're helping me more so than I'd ever helped them with that aspect in mind, is gaining more knowledge on things. So, but yes, we have had to adapt to her a lot. And it's funny, we've gotten two Mustangs through this program too. And, me and my wife all the time, when things aren't going right, we're like, oh shoot, we should have picked the other one to show, you know? So it's definitely a roller coaster, up and down. And I think that's the main thing we're fighting is having a consistent horse come, you know, September. So if I can say anything, it would be by changing my program, it's making me get out there and find more knowledge to adapt to her.
I completely agree with you. And you know, the training aspect, it reminds me very much of training mules. I've trained mules. I've shown mules for years, and people think they're stubborn, and they are in a sense. But it's not because they're a dumb, stubborn animal. It's because they're incredibly smart. And I think what mules and Mustangs share is a mule will say, what's in it for me? Is this going to be safe for me? I'm not sure if we should do this. We're a lot of breeds of horses are going to kind of, you know, they're sort of like the golden retrievers of the horse world, is that they'll just say, okay, you tell me to do it, I'm going to do it. Mustangs and mules are like, nope, I've been out around the block. I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to protect myself. Why do you want me to walk on this like little pallet bridge when I know we can just go around and be completely safe? And so, What I've learned with training both of those kinds of animals is there are times where I've just had to say, okay, you know what? Let's try this again tomorrow and we're going to take a break. Or I never do it this way, but I'm going to do it this way to help you figure it out. And it's not really cheating. You're not cheating your program, but it helps you create more tools for your tool bag, I think.
Well, and that you said a lot there, and to me, that's what makes a true horseman is being able to adapt to that animal that they're working with. And like I said before, that's what these Mustangs have brought to our program is, you know, it's kind of opened our eyes. Every one of them's an individual, and we gotta attack things at their level and their learning curve, and you know their attention span. So. We've had to do that a lot, you know, trying to show her something that, say, a spin. She starts it good and then it kind of falls apart. And if we were to stay there and pound on it, we'd have a pretty upset horse. And a lot of times they spit the bit and they want to go a different route. So finding the things that they do good and building on that is very key with these Mustangs. You know, some of the more domesticated horses, they work off of more discipline than, you know, on the good things. So it's been, like I said before, it's been a roller coaster, but it's brought a lot of insight to our program.
Well, and it's interesting, you were mentioning the spin with your mare, and I've almost had a similar program and a problem with my mare that I had in 2011, and someone gave me the weirdest piece of advice, and it worked. So I had this mare who would start the spin. So we're doing like a little reining spin for those of you wondering, you know, for when we do the pattern in the competition, you have to move their forequarters around their hindquarters. And if you can do it with a little bit of, you know, flash and get them to kind of clock around pretty cute and fast, it looks really good. So I'm working on her little spin. She would start it good. And then in the mid spin, she would protest. She would grab the bit, jump on her hind feet, jump forward. And it'd always take me a little bit to get her back. And then she'd finish off okay. And I could not figure out what to do. And someone looked at her and he said, wrap her leg. And I typically don't wrap a horse's legs. If they're a colt, I don't wrap them for about a year, you know, maybe 6 months. And a Mustang, I don't wrap their legs very often as a general rule. And he looked at her and he said, she's getting mad at you. He said, because when she's spinning, she's hitting her legs together and she's blaming you. And as soon as I put boots on her, it stopped. She was perfectly fine, which is just the weirdest thing. Cause I've known quarter horses who were like, okay, I'll hit my legs, whatever. You know, I just want to please you. And this mare was not having it. She did not like the fact that she was hitting her legs against each other. And she was very angry with me, but as soon as I protected her legs, she was totally fine.
You know, and it's cool. I'm glad you brought that up because I'm a strong believer here in a lot of the horses that we ride. Getting outside opinions are great. You know, having somebody else watch. And I know for a fact, if you try to do these makeovers and do it all alone, then you're going to get real discouraged. So having outside help is very key in all this stuff.
And I think that's something that's really great about this community is you will have trainers that you're competing against that will invite you over to their place, and they're not going to begrudge you any help. They're going to give you everything they've got. And I've had that experience more than once. I've had trainers that I competed with and even beat in the competition that helped me start my Mustang and then did it again, you know, the next year, no problems. It's kind of enlightening to be in that different kind of community where everyone's just helping each other. And I think one of the reasons for that is these Mustangs are so humbling because everyone's had the experience of the week before, you know, you have the horse to win it and you bring them there and they do the young horse thing and say, no, I'm not going to go in the arena today. So we've all been there. We've all been humbled. And we
You're
all
not
know.
Kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that kind of brings me to my next question. You know, I know you didn't get the chance to show in Florida, but I assume you've probably showed your own horses in the past. Would you say that this kind of competition is different from your typical horse show?
Well, it's different because knowing you're going up against everybody that started from scratch, I think it makes somewhat of a level playing field with everybody involved. Because say we go to a reining horse show, you'll be competing against horses that are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars that, you know, some big time trainer started and stuff like that. This is, you're starting off raw and coming into that. So, and that's why it is so humbling, because everybody there has been on that, on a roller coaster of their own. So it's, to me, it's very, very challenging. And it, like you, we mentioned before, very addicting. And I think that's the addicting part of it, is you're starting off with a raw specimen or a raw animal and trying to get it to, I know we're trying to lean towards some high performance and stuff, and 120 days, it's not a very big window to do that. So the challenge is there, and the rewards are there too.
Well, I think that, you know, that time period, most of us, when we go to a show, with the intent of, okay, I'm going to try to do really well, we're on a horse we've trained for at least 2 years, or someone else has also, you know, has trained and put a few years on. So we know what we have. We know if they're going to run hot. We know, you know, if they need less warm up, more warm up, what kind of things they like, what kind of shoes work best for them in this kind of footing. And there's all that stuff that you just learn about your horse because you've had so much time with them, to kind of figure out their little quirks and what they need. And, you know, oh, if I warm up this horse any more than 15 minutes, he's going to be too tired and, you know, and grumpy to show, or this horse needs a lot of time to see the arena. With these Mustangs, we get a few chances to haul them in the time period, but it's usually a big guess. So that's something that's always fun to try to figure out in the time period. Now, one of the things, and you totally don't have to give anything away, but one of the things that's always on our mind, aside from just training the horse and hoping we get to ride the horse, it's not going to be too wild, is you've got to have a freestyle. You've got to plan for a freestyle, even if you're not sure you're going to make it. So how much has your freestyle, has that factored into your training plans? Did you have an idea from the get-go? How much time are you devoting to that every day when you're training your Mustang?
You know, I never sat down and really trained for a freestyle, because number one, we got to make it there, first of all. And in my mind, if I get her where she's just broke, if I can do some nice maneuvers and stuff like that, I'm confident about my lead changes. I'm confident about stops and spins. I think the rest will come together. Me and my wife, we sat down actually. She's, oh, we got to work on your freestyle. And I know we do, just so we can be prepared. But if I have my horse prepared to go do just about anything, then it kind of flows. I know if we get out here and we drill on freestyle, 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 then to me, she's going to be in tune for just that. So I want to keep her well-rounded, and keep her in between my reins and in between my legs, and I think the rest will come.
I think that's a really great way to approach it, and I would say I do the same thing when really I just kind of avoid it because it scares the heck out of me, and I come up with it about a week before. But yes, having the horse broke ahead of time, you have enough tools at your disposal to say, well, my horse can side pass, so I'm going to do a side pass in my freestyle, or, you know, he handles pretty well, I think I might be able to drop the bridle. So I totally agree. Get him broke first and then start adding the fancy stuff. And that's probably about,
My thing is, even, you know, if we do make it there, I want to somewhat keep things simple, but do simple great. And you know, if we have this big show planned and all that stuff, but I don't want to leave windows to mess up. You know what I mean? I want to keep things simple, but do simple great instead of doing great and having a chance messing up.
Well, in my experience, that has been the exact perfect mindset. I've seen people with just these huge ideas, and sometimes they pull them off and it's amazing. But more often than not, it kind of gets bigger than what your horse is able to give you. And so I think just showing the horse you have, showing what your horse can do and not what your horse cannot do, is going to be a huge, huge thing for the judges to see. So that's probably all the time we have for today. But if people want to follow you and your Mustang, where can we find you online?
We Facebook is the main place. We have our business page, Flying A Performance Horses, or you can follow me on my personal page, Jimbo Albritton. So, again, this has been a great program. We've been lucky enough to one have us ourselves a competition horse, and my daughter as well. She's in the youth, and we have a local high school girl. She's in the youth, so we'll be leaving Florida with a trailer load, looking to do some great things.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We will post the link to your pages on our website, and good luck in the competition.
Awesome. Thank you for the opportunity to visiting with you guys, and hope to see you there.
All right. Thanks.
Well, I got to tell you, what I was thinking about there was the one comment he made, which I never really thought about before, is how the Mustang competitions level the playing field. Because it's been a huge issue now in the jumping world and the dressage world and all the conversations going on about rich kids and expensive horses and they can just buy their way to victory. Boy, when you're in these competitions, that ain't the case, is it?
No. And, it is such a feeling of, I don't know what I would call it, vindication or satisfaction. I want everyone to do well, of course. I want everyone to have a good trip. But especially for the Mustang Million, because it was $1 million purse, it brought out these amazing trainers that have won world championships, have been to the FEI and won gold medals, are cutting champions, are world-class clinician horsemen. And so in the beginning you're like, oh my gosh, so and so is competing, oh my god, what am I going to do? And we all get pretty much the same kind of horse at the same level of training, and being that they're green horses, these guys would post videos beforehand and you're like, oh man, I'm not going to beat that. And then they get to the competition and the horse decides, well, I'm not going to pick up my feet for the trail class, which was an element. And it's just one of those things. It does not reflect on the trainer or the program. They did a great job, but you've got a baby horse, a baby wild horse. When I say baby, I mean green. You've got a green wild horse that sometimes they just decide, I don't want to do it today. And there's nothing you can do. And I think that's what's created this amazing community of trainers that, like I said, I've hauled to trainers I've competed with and then went on to beat that were just totally helpful and gave me so much knowledge and didn't begrudge me any of it, no matter how we placed afterwards. And I think it's because we all know that we could get over there and get bucked off. It's a little bit unpredictable in that aspect.
Well, I think actually these competitions just went up in my mind because of what he said, because of what he just said. It is. I'd never thought about it before, and I've been covering this for 9 years. I just never had thought about it in that light before. It's really cool. Well, Mary, we've run out of time, and you didn't get to like 3 listener questions. They're all going to be mad at you.
Didn't get to like 20 listener questions.
I know. We answered 3 of them, and the other 20 are mad. So if you have complaints, send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And
I'm gonna save these, and we're going to do these next month. I promise.
Okay. She's promised. We'll see. She's promised. But yeah, definitely save them, and we'll try and get to the ones we didn't get to today. So we appreciate that. Now, some programming notes for the next couple of days. There will be no live show tomorrow or Monday. We're heading to the American Equestrian Trade Association. Jennifer is preparing a show for you tomorrow, and Monday we'll have recorded and put out on the feed the new products episode that we do from ADA every year. We're going to record that on Sunday and put it out on the feed on Monday. We usually do that live, but to be honest, there were no flights that day that were convenient. We had to take a morning flight out, so we're going to record it on Sunday, and it'll be on your feed Monday morning. So you're still going to get a brand new ADA episode on Monday morning. It just will not be live. So keep that in mind. Tuesday, we'll be back live. Now, we are, Devin and I are going to be doing the 8 p.m. Facebook Lives every night covering the Mongol Derby. So you'll still get your Mongol Derby fix. Well, that'll be an extra show in your feed every night. And we'll be doing that from Ada from the hotel. Somehow we're going to get that done. And I'll put the audio out in your feed if you can't watch it on Horses in the Morning Facebook page. Now, Mary, where can people find you and your products and videos and DVDs and all that stuff?
Okay, a few different places. So if you want to follow me on my horsemanship, you can go on Facebook at Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship. If you want DVDs and horse stuff, you can go to MaryKitzmiller.com. And I finally got all my products online under a new website, TroublemakerTradingCompany.com. And we've got a Facebook page under the same name. We've got some really, really cool stuff.
I have no idea how you got that name.
I know, right? It just came to me in a vision.
Well, that's good. And I'm glad you finally got your products online. People can buy them. I've been bugging you for, what, 3-4 years?
It only took like hundreds of hours.
Well, good. You'll sell more with actually having people be able to buy them. So that's...
Which has been the case, actually. Surprising.
Amazing marketing, how that works.
Marketing tip of the day.
And you know what? The auditors keep asking. So can you post that link in the auditor room, too?
I would. I didn't want to be like, you know, one
no,
of
post
those
it because
people.
They've all been asking okay. about buying your stuff. They love to buy your stuff, and we've never had a place to do it before. And we'll also post a link. Go ahead and post a link on the Horses in the Morning page, Facebook page, so people can find it there.
Okay, sounds great.
Good. I just have one final update from the Mongol Derby. They just posted a little while ago that at the furthest most stops, 7 and 8, where the leaders are, including Leslie, they have good weather. It's forecast for clear for when they head out again in their morning. And they ended with have ass-slappingly good start in the a.m. So they do have a interesting sense of humor, British sense of humor.
I will be using that adverb frequently from now on.
What, ass-slappingly?
Yes.
I never heard that term before, so that must be, I don't know if it's a British thing or not, but I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, good. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again in a couple of days here from Philadelphia.